Hey, everybody, welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Grow Yourself. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty. And in this episode, we will explore I would say a rather unusual topic, you know, of timeless wisdom, meaning wisdom that has passed down from generation to generation. In fact, we're going to explore a deep dive into what my guests would call practical wisdom skills. And these are skills that have helped people and societies navigate the ups and downs of life and build relationships, find purpose, you know, find fulfillment in their daily lives. And listen, you know, living in such a fast-paced, technology-driven era, it can be easy to forget the lessons of the past. We get caught up in the latest trends and the gadgets and the fads that I think we forget the importance of slowing down, of connecting, connecting to what matters most. But there is something about bringing, ancient living, I guess you could say, or ancient wisdom back into our daily lives. And that's the wisdom that, came from a time, I think, when people lived simpler lives, when they had time to contemplate deeper understanding of ourselves and others and the world around us. And so let's do just that. Let's spend some time today to explore these practical wisdom skills that have stood the test of time. And by the way, I have a very special guest who has immersed himself into the studies and the practice of wisdom skills. And I can also tell you he is, from just the small time that I've spent with him, in addition to sort of being an expert and a studier of these wisdom skills, he's a really good guy as well. My guest is Elver Kusevic. Elver is an investment and banker, by the way, by day, and then a teacher of wisdom skills by night. So his new project is called Upend.com. We're going to ask him about that. And it's a new school of living wisdoms where he says that, ancient and indigenous people's causes are taught and celebrated. And after teaching at Yale and building three successful brain medical device companies, Elver settled in San Francisco with his wife and four children. He is an investor of inventor of over 30 patents globally. And like I said, on top of it all, he's a really good guy. And so I would like to now welcome Elver Kusevic. Thank you, Elver, so much for taking the time to be with us on Grow Yourself.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I really appreciate the invitation. And as I've had a chance to learn a bit about you, I'm really excited about our conversation.
This is an incredible topic I say it's unusual. I mean, perhaps people talk about it, but I've really never, run across anybody who studied ancient wisdom, who learned these practical skills and now is bringing it to us in 2023 and to teach us and help us understand all of that. You know, before we kind of get started, I would just like to just ask, who is Elver Kusevic? Tell me a little bit about who you are, where you were brought up, and just let our audience know who you are.
Sure. Look, I was born in what was Yugoslavia, what is now Bosnia. It's a little country down in southeastern Europe. Yugoslavia used to border Italy and Austria and Hungary and Bulgaria and Romania and Greece, kind of nestled in on the Adriatic Sea. So my people are, the people of the Balkans. You hear the word Balkans.
Yes.
And long and proud tradition. And in our tradition, what's most interesting is that we learned for many, many years how to live together in some pretty rough times. And when we've not been under somebody, right, we were under the Roman Empire for all this time and Byzantine Empire and Ottoman Empire and Austro-Hungarian and all of that. We all of these cultures, as they intersected, they made a really rich society. So that really defines me quite a bit. And it's this idea of coexisting, appreciating our differences, you know, holding my own, respecting my own, but also respecting you and yours. And as I, you know, I grew up in Bosnia, I came to the States as a foreign exchange student 32 years ago.
Nice.
Soon to be 33 years ago, in a little tiny town in Aurora, Missouri, close to Springfield, Missouri, in Southwest Missouri. So it was a cultural shock, so many different ways.
Can only imagine. But
that was the kind of the first big cultural shock where I realized that, you know, we could be so different, yet we're kind of the core underlying principles are the same, right? And it's really dividing people into, you know, are people good and generative and out there creating something good? Are they giving? Are they of strong character? Do they respect and appreciate each other and the truth and being, you know, being honest? And these are the kinds of values that that I grew up with. And then, of course, the, you know, growing up, second part of my growing up in America from 17 on, and, you know, four kids and all of that has really shaped who I am. Now, of course, you listed some of the things on my resume. We all have a resume, right? We've all done things and been there and all of that. But what's always been a driver for me is studying people from different cultures and what's the same and what's different. And that's kind of how the whole thing of UPIN came about.
That's fantastic. And we're going to ask you about that. You know, I do think, and I've traveled a lot and you haven't been to the Balkan areas, but I certainly would love to get there. But just going into Europe, whether it's Greece, I've been to Greece and some of these other places, but it, just about any part of Europe, you know, the first thing that you notice is just how old it is. I was in Italy a few years ago and up in the lake, in northern Italy. I just can't think of
Lake
it right
Como?
Off the top. Not Cuomo, but the other one in the middle of the state up at the top. In any event, you know, there was a town there that was from, I don't know, 500 or 600, you know, and I'm looking around and think, you know, the United States was, you know, just a, you know, couple hundred years or so old. And this one goes back to the, you know, 500, 600. And so I think about you, though, from the Balkans and the traditions that, you know, that are carried on, you know, from an area that goes back to ancient times, really. You know, not that that wasn't happening here in the States, but not as we know as Americans. So you're bringing really these two traditions together in your thinking, I would suppose, in your studies to talk about ancient wisdom. That is absolutely fascinating. But let me just ask you, first of all, what is, you know, I guess I'll start with asking you, what is wisdom? What is that? How would you define it?
That is a $1 million question. And depending on who you ask, you get, you know, you get different answers. But my working definition is that having wisdom is really having a set of skills to live well, to enjoy each other, and to cherish kind of the earth, cherish our world that we live in. And if you can set up your life such that it works for you and those you love and your community, then I think that's a good life. And that's what wisdom teaches. You mentioned, you know, the differences between the cultures. One of the surprises when I came to America is learning more and more about, you know, the Native Americans, right? The culture of the indigenous people of America. And finding in a weird way, in some sense, more similarity between my indigenous culture from the Balkans and the indigenous culture in America than I did with some of the neighboring cultures.
How interesting.
For example, like some of the same things that I learned from my friends who are from, you know, various traditions, various you know, tribes and various indigenous traditions in the U.S. It's like some of the teaching, some of the respect, for example, respect of the elders. And respect of the young, right? Really listening to the young and hearing their opinions and not treating them as kids. But this idea of respect of the land, right? Respect of nature, respect of, you know, plants and animals, is deeply rooted in me and my culture. And I found it also very deeply rooted in the Native American culture. But also as I traveled to South America and as I traveled, I was in Rwanda not that long ago and in Africa. And as you talk to people around the world, what became clear to me is that there are links between these various cultures. And that's what was kind of a light bulb moment as I traveled around the world and worked and lived around the world, that there's a common thread. And the number of things you need to learn in each culture is large, right? If the cultures are rich, right? They have the languages and customs and origin stories and religions and societies and all of that. But if you kind of go deeper and deeper and deeper and look underneath the cosmology, they call it, and underneath the anthropology and underneath the customs, you see that the wisdoms of kind of how to live a good life are very similar. And that's what was very intriguing to me, is that jumped cultures, it jumped continents, it jumped ancient cultures and indigenous cultures and modern academic research that you see around the world, that, you know, in universities around the world that's being carried out. They're all talking about the same few core concepts.
I'd be interested to know, what are those few core concepts, or even just a couple of them, you know, because my thought was, and you just mentioned about living a better life. And I thought, you know, okay, so, you know, I think conceptually we all know, you know, the purpose of wisdom, I guess you could say, but what is the purpose of wisdom? I mean, what are you trying to pass down to those that come behind us? What are those core things?
Look, what we're trying to teach each other and pass down to the next generation is how to live well.
How to live
well. So what does it mean to live well? It means that, you know, my life is working, my health is working, my family relationships are working, my community relationships are working, and the world in which I live is in balance, right? I'm paying attention, you know, I'm balancing between nature's demands and community's demands, right? I'm balancing between my demands and you know, my family's demands. I'm balancing between my demands now and my needs in the future, right? I'm not, you know, if I have 100 pounds of chocolate in my house, I don't just sit down and eat it all and die of diabetes in 4 weeks or whatever, right? I know how to balance.
Yeah.
So if there's one virtue in wisdom, it's this balance. And then it's the balance between myself and others, balance between now and later.
Yeah.
Balance between, you know, knowing how much to do when, knowing what to do when. And I think that's if you study wisdom, you know, if you study wise people, for example, in these academic studies, there's dozens of centers around the world that perform real studies, right, with thousands of people. And they ask thousands of people, who are the people that you find wise and what are the characteristics of those wise people? Mm-hmm. It turns out it's the same thing you learn if you study African culture, where it all began, and if you study, you know, the Native American culture, if you study ancient European cultures, it's some of these same concepts. So balance being the overarching one, and then there's a whole variety of others that fall underneath. But there is a little bit of a hierarchy, right? So for example, the concept of respect is really important. And, you know, why is it that we teach our kids to be respectful? Because we want to teach them respect. And they need to respect their bodies, right? You see a lot of that's, you know, what's happening today with social media and everything else. They need to respect their bodies in terms of health, right? Mm-hmm. How they eat, how they talk, how they dress. It doesn't matter. It's not prescriptive. It's not about telling them you got to dress this way. But the way you're acting is respectful to yourself, is respectful to your community. Because we do live together, right? And is it respectful to your environment, right? Are you throwing off so much trash in your daily life that you're really not respecting your environment? And is there a balance between your needs and the needs of your environment, right?
Mm. I'm hearing two things here, and I love this idea that you're bringing to the surface, the idea of balance. I mean, I think even in our natural bodies, you know, there's that whole concept of homeostasis, and it's all about trying to keep things balanced in our body, and that's what makes us operate. But the second thing is you're talking about these universal principles. You know, Stephen Covey, he often talked about this concept of living a principle-centered life, and like you, he put the idea of principles first, that if, you know, respect is an enduring quality. And like you said, it's not suggesting you need to dress this way or that way, or that this is right or that is wrong. It's the notion, it's the understanding that respect as a principle exists, and it's important to the quality of our lives. Am I hearing you correctly?
Exactly. And look, if you look at, you know, again, just to come back to the notion of Native Americans, there were 500 plus tribes that lived in America, mostly peacefully for a very long time, right? And the six tribes, or five plus one, they call it, you know, I learned, you know, they call it the Iroquois Federation, or the, you know, the Iroquois Confederacy. Iroquois, unfortunately, is not a great name. It means rattlesnake, right? So it's a derogatory name. So it's really Haudenosaunee Confederation, and there's some serious scientific research into the origins of our Constitution in the states. This idea that we have states, and that states have, you know, their if you will, sovereignty or their freedom, and then we come together as a country, and then we have things that we deal with together as a country, and then we have things that we deal with as states. Like that concept, like, didn't really exist in Europe as such. Right, you had these nation states or kingdoms, but they're very different kinds of concepts. Also, the concept, for example, of how you appoint a chief, right? You have the elders in a society, elders in a tribe, elders in a group around the world appoint chiefs, and in those elders are included women and men. And you know, this whole concept of gender equality, that, you know, or racial equality, things that we're talking about a lot today, that we're grappling as a country with these issues. A lot of these issues have been kind of dealt with before. And one of the things I'm sad about is we're not really taking advantage of this incredible body of knowledge that we have of how to deal with each other, how to live with each other, how to respect each other's boundaries, right? What's the right, you know, what's the right balance there? We're not really engaged so much in the process of seeking balance. A lot of America today, some of my friends are engaged in positions. Like, this is my position, and I will fight. Yeah. I'll either die for this position or kill for this position.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is my position, without really spending some time to try to hear and understand the other side, which I think is sorely needed. Unfortunately, the media and all of these other things, you know, flame things up. For a whole different reason, because they make money.
Correct. Right? That's right. Literally. No, that's very important what you're saying there, the ulterior motives that we don't quite understand, you know, but you're exactly right that if you and I were negotiating about something, or if we were mediating about something, you know, if we took a moment to look at each other's interests in the outcome, oftentimes it's the same thing, but it's a position that we take. And so we stick to the position and never look at, you know, just a simple question. If I said, Elver, so you want this to happen. What is your interest in that? And you say, well, you know, I just want to be respected. And I think, well, I mean, I want to respect you. I want to be respected. Okay, so now we can come to this common understanding and talk and get away from the positions. You know, the position might be that, you know, I'm your supervisor and you're the employee and you need to just shut up and listen. Well, that's a position that we take, as opposed to getting to the interest that we both have. I love what you're saying there. Let me ask you this very quickly. I was thinking about it. So, you know, I mean, I have to be a practicing Christian. And so I do think about my wisdom and my values, if you will, come in large part from the Christian tradition. So my question to you is that where does religion play into the development of wisdom and how we pass it down? Because there's also some debate about that, about our morals and these sorts of things that you know, where they stem from, and that you can be good without this, or, you know, again, I really just want to know more about what you think about that.
No, I'm glad you bring it up. I mean, if if you read, the best we can figure out from the historical record, and of course from, you know, from the Bible, from the Old Testament and New Testament, and if you hear and really study, you know, the best I could, the best I knew how, you know, how Jesus lived and what he said and how he behaved and how he was with others, and if you watch movies and read books and speak to people who are deeply religious and scholars at the same time, you find some of the same things. You see some of the church writings from hundreds of years ago, from across the different parts, you know, say Catholicism or the Protestant part, or, you know, Baptist or whatever, in every leg, Orthodox, right? We had in Bosnia and have today, you know, the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church and the synagogue and the mosque, you know, basically within a few hundred feet of each other.
Interesting.
In, you know, in different parts of town. And they've gotten along, you know, great for all of these years. And as a matter of fact, when the Spanish kicked out the Jews in the 1530s, the Sephardic Jews, the first place that would take them, right? They would just keep getting expelled out east, east, east. And the westernmost place that took them was Sarajevo, where I'm from.
Interesting.
And so there's a beautiful synagogue there, and there's an ancient book called the Haggadah that's very important in the Jewish tradition, especially for Sephardic Jews. And that Haggadah was saved, you know, in various wars by different, you know, religious leaders of a different group, right? At one point, it was saved by the Orthodox. In another time, it was saved by the Muslims, kind of hidden away because the synagogue was on fire. And during, you know, during World War II, when the Nazis were there, it was saved by, you know, a Muslim priest and hidden until after the war because of that respect. That's there. So I do think, I for one think that I don't see the reason really for the religions not to coexist. I'm in that camp, and I can see where there's respect. And look, you know, I don't know how many times I've been to religious ceremonies where there's multiple religious leaders, interfaith leaders, and there's a lot of agreement amongst them. Yeah, there are differences, and there are doctrinal differences. They're, you know, they're deep, important, even within the church, right? The church split in what, 1030 or something like that.
Yes.
Right? The Orthodox and the Catholic and Constantinople and Rome and all of that. But even then, the Pope just recently, for example, published a new treatise on the doctrine of first discovery. Right, kind of refreshed first discovery, and acknowledge that Christians had caused harm to the indigenous people, and kind of walk back some of the things that the church did. So I believe that, you know, religions are, it's important to go back to the roots, right, of how the, you know, how Moses and Abraham received the word of God, and how Jesus received the word of God, and how Muhammad received the word of God, and so on and so forth, in various religions. And, but it's also important to realize that these, you know, the religions adapt and grow and learn, and they are on a longer cycle, right? So I was thrilled to see the Pope, you know, publish a lot of documents and make a lot of statements and make amends and ask for forgiveness, and I think that's a positive thing, and it's exactly the same kind of thing that I see in various indigenous traditions as I talk to my friends from indigenous cultures from all over the world, right? And in Australia, in New Zealand, in everywhere, the conversation amongst the believers is very similar, and also very respectful of the non-believers, right? And it's, it goes down to character. What kind of a person are you? Are you a person that has empathy? Are you a person that has courage? Are you a person who has a strong stand about where you stand?
Yes.
Who you are in the world.
That's correct.
From that foundation, then, you know, these other things are not a threat. So I think the religious teachings are completely consistent with,
you know, it's interesting that I've noticed that if, you know, there's, speaking of wisdom, I'm trying to think of his name right now, but I'd heard this statement one time about selling, about, you know, being a salesperson. And the statement went like this, that people love to buy, but they hate to be sold to.
That's right.
Yeah. So here's what I've noticed in a long career of immersing myself in cultures, but I've worked a lot in the, frankly, in the diversity and inclusion, equal opportunity arena for many, many years. I lived overseas, and here's what I always noticed and what I always then encourage, like even companies today to do. So when we were in Israel, my wife and I were, we were part of the embassy there, but we helped to structure this international day. And the international day was out at a park that was basically owned by the embassy. We invited different embassies to bring their goods, their food, their garb. We told Americans, bring your stuff from Texas, you know, from New York, whatever. Everybody bring, you have a table, a booth. And we, and they had a little stage there, and people performed from different countries and all these. And here's what I saw the entire day. Nothing but smiles and laughter and interest. And you, I would walk by booths and people would just be like glued into the stories being told by a certain culture or about a certain culture, passing on wisdom. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful day. And then there are the other events where they have where they have an exclusive Black History Month, or they send out, Native American Month, or whatever, on all these things where people perceive to some degree that it's being forced upon them. And so there's not that same reception about it. Even, I mean, not that people necessarily are angry about it, but they're not that interested because they just think this is an icon. It's an artifact. It's a something that we have to do because because it's being forced upon us. And so I'll smile and keep walking, but it's a whole different tone. And if we could get our minds around this idea that you bring these cultures together in your town and other places, people will smile and enjoy it and love it because they want to share. And that's a different way of looking at it. I don't know if you have a thought about that.
Yeah, it reminds me of what my wife always says to our, we have a 12-year-old son. And she says, look, I don't need you to do anything for me. I just really need you to know how to take care of yourself, right? Like I need you to know what I'm trying to teach you is how to be good, how to do things that are good for you short term and long term. And I think it's good for us to learn how to live with each other. I think it's not great when we don't know how. It's like a lack of skill when we don't know how to communicate, you know, with each other. I mean, isn't there, what's that verse in the Bible? You know, I made you different so you may learn how to love each other, right? So you may learn how to know each other, right? Depending on which translation you look at. And that same concept shows up in the Bhagavad Gita. It shows up in so many different ancient cultures. It shows up in the Quran. It shows up, just everywhere.
And this is the wisdom.
If you read the Talmud, it's the whole concept of living around and learning languages and you just think of the sayings, right? We have a saying in our culture, which is the same. You may know this from Israel. It says, as many languages as you know, it's how many men you're worth.
Oh wow!
It's how many persons you're worth. So yes. Because if you know the language, you know the culture.
Yes.
And then if you know one language and one culture, you're like one man, one person worth. And if you know six languages, you know six cultures, then you're six persons worth.
Wow! I love that.
And that's a powerful, powerful sentence. Because you know you learn the language, you learn a culture. Right? We put our son, for example, in a Chinese American school. In San Francisco. So my wife and I don't speak a word of Chinese. Ni hao ma, that's it.
Yeah.
But our son is fluent in Chinese.
No kidding. And that's not an easy.
He also brought home so much of the Chinese culture because they have Chinese New Year and they have this.
Yeah.
And they have the lion dance and they have this and they have that. And they have the food and the culture and the respect for elders and this and that. Yeah. And Grandparents Day and all of these different things. They just enriched us so much. Now, of course, there are always people like there were in my country, where in Yugoslavia, there are people who take advantage of religious or ethnic. Mm. We didn't have race; we're all white, but except for the Roma that were there. But basically, the three main warring parties, if you will, were the Bosnians and the Serbs and the Croats, and one were I wouldn't say even predominantly, but some of the folks are Catholic and some are Orthodox and some are Muslim and some are atheist, like that. And then even in the war, there were, at any one point in the war, there were two or three groups that were against the other group. But it was kind of random depending on where you were.
So the
story doesn't hold that there's this deep religious hatred, blah, blah, blah. Mm. It was, you know, it was a little more practical on the ground, you know, how it went. But to see a country like country I grew up in disintegrate because of these ethnic hatreds, you just brought home the idea how important these lessons of wisdom are, right? And when I saw what was happening in America in the last, you know, I don't know, maybe last decade, let's say, right, with this upswing of school shootings and you know, drug use. And San Francisco is a terrible example, right, of just a society's inability to be wise. And then people taking extreme positions, right? You talk about homelessness, people take extreme positions. You talk about crime, people take extreme positions. Rather than really stepping back and saying, okay, what actually works? You know, what does it take here? It takes, you know, we're trying to find balance, right? Yes. I complain in San Francisco that we don't have balance between the rights of the homeless and the rights of children, right? We don't, right? Yeah. It's out of balance.
Or the rights of businesses, the rights of the people, the passerbyers, all of those.
It's, you know, there. So we have to have balance, right? Rights of criminals, rights of people from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. How do we find balance? And the question is not how to find balance. Mm-hmm. I just see positions and radical. And this radicalization leads to war. There's no question. I experienced it in my own skin. Since World War II, we lived happy lives. You know, I was in New York City, close to New York City around September 11th. Mm. And the war in Bosnia started like September 10th and September 11th. September 10th, everything was fine.
Mm.
You know, I was a foreign exchange student. My dad had a private business. My mom worked at a bank. My brother went to school. Next day, war started. I couldn't get anybody on the phone. Couldn't get, you know, bank accounts shut down. Houses burnt down. It was like that. So when I saw things, you know, around January 6th or whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm not getting any political.
Leave politics
out of it. But when I saw that kind of upheaval and that kind of polarization, I'm saying this isn't good. This isn't good. So, you know, we made it through. We'll make it through. But I think one way to make it through is to go back to these concepts of reciprocity, right? You know, there are several different definitions of reciprocity, right? One that we all kind of think about is I do something for you, and you do something for me.
Yeah.
But if you think a little broader, and if you mentioned Christianity, but if you look at what various, you know, traditional religions teach, it's your relationship is really not between you and me. It's not between you and me. It's I give into the world around me, and then I receive from the world around me, which if you think about the first human traditions, they learned from nature. That's how nature works. You know, the apple is not negotiating with the bee, with any one particular bee, right? The apple tree just sits there and the bees do their job, the apples do their job, but the fruit of the apple is eaten by animals and the animals carry the seed over there. It's like a whole ecosystem. So I ask myself, what's my role? What's my purpose here? What am I really good at? What are my gifts? Gifts from God or gifts from the universe or gifts from statistics? Doesn't matter which way you subscribe to look at it. But what's unique to me, where I can be a contribution, and then let me just focus on that contribution. Instead of saying, oh no, I got to earn money, so what I really want to do is X, but what I have to do is Y. So let me go be miserable doing Y so that I can do this instead of that. And then, you know, in that process of being miserable, I'm going to then say, okay, well, this person is in my way. And they're in my way because they're green or yellow or young or old or man or woman or whatever, right? And I make up all of these stories instead of just going back and saying, okay, who am I? I live in an ecosystem. How do I get intelligent enough to collaborate with the ecosystem around me? And if I collaborate, it's actually good for me if I find a good way to do it. Right?
Yes.
Now that doesn't mean I'm a pushover, right?
No.
I hold.
But
my
you
own.
Said it earlier, balance, and that's the important concept here. You know, that's interesting. I want to ask you something. I do want to ask you about upend as well. You know, I think, and maybe, you know, maybe this has been sort of maybe it's even cyclical over the eras or something like this. But I think most people at least perceive that and I'll say more in the U.S., you know, that we're in this sort of a me society. And that, and I think there's evidence of that, that, you know, if it's not, you know, it, that it seems to be more that way, because over the years, over the decades and centuries, we have pressed this issue of individual rights, which I'm a proponent of, I am, you know, but then the whole idea of diversity and all those sorts of things, I think has led now people to believe that it's all about me and what I think and what I feel, and I'm just going to do me and you do you. But to the point where I think we are now bumping up against the balance and the principle of you. You see, at least I grew up and somehow, you know, I don't know, kind of specifically point to it, but being a member of my community, of my church, of my neighborhood, it's important that I look, you know, look to help you. And it's not just all about me. And have we lost that balance? And more than have we lost that balance, you know, how do we get back to that? You know, that it's almost a dichotomy now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, you know, if you look at the creed of, let's say, Jesuits or San Franciscans in the Catholic religion, right? It's, if one of my good friends always says, look, if there's one word to describe, you know, the way he sees himself being a Jesuit, it, the word is others.
Others,
right? You always are asking yourself, what can I do for others, right? And so if you're Franciscans, the word is poor, right? What can I do for those who don't have, right? Saint Francis, that's you know, he took a vow of poverty and had a brown, you know, garb, and off he went, piece of rope, and off he went into the world and started a different order, protesting against the church and the gold and the this and that and the other, right? In a clever way. And you have examples of this all over the world, right? In various religions and traditions. And some of it, I think, is just this individualism. It's like a, you know, I have three daughters who are now through the teenage years and a son who's coming into the teenage years. And it's like a phase, the way I see it, right? It's like this individualism, you know, we almost like got to push it to the limit. Like I call it rabid individualism. And I'm all for it, right? I'm all for individualism. But in balance, right? It's and we all we pretend like we don't live in, you know, we don't know how to work with others, but we do. I mean, we all stop at red stoplights, right? Because it's a good thing good to point. Do. It's a smart thing to do. Yeah. Otherwise, we have traffic at a crawl, right? It doesn't work for anybody. So we got to have some rules of, you know, of how we operate with each other, and we got to recognize that we can't just say, okay, on day one, here's what we're gonna do, right? We have to have the courage, right? That's another key wisdom. Trait, right? Virtue is the courage. And we have to have the courage, for example, as a country, right? Every country has to have courage to deal with itself, right? You know, Germany, I think personally, Germany has done a serious introspection, right? If you talk to many of my German friends, I'm in Austria today, for example, but if you talk to, you know, my German friends, they've done some serious introspection about what happened in World War II. Right, and they're you know, they're struggling. There's still parts of Germany that don't really like how things went.
I've lived in Germany for many years, and I agree with you.
They split it into, you know, East and West Germany, and there's a lot of gripe about how that happened and did that have to happen, and did we really have to destroy these cities? Or if you look at Japanese culture, I've spent a lot of time in Japan. Right, they've spent real time trying to come to terms about what they did in World War II, and I think as a nation in America, we have a little trouble. Coming to terms with some big things that happen, right? With you know, coming to America, quote unquote, discovering America, but things that happen with indigenous people, we got to have the courage to take a look, right? We got to have the courage, you know, the Portuguese, for example, have, in some sense, you know, they transported ships, right? In Amsterdam, were in the Netherlands, the slave trade happened, right? And but the Portuguese were the transport people. They had 40,000 ships. Of slaves, 40,000 ships, right? So I have a very good Portuguese friend,
had no idea.
American Portuguese friend, who says, look, I've got to come to terms with my ancestry here. And I think we as a country have to come to terms with, like, okay, this happened, right? Slavery happened. We got to come to terms that we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, right? These things happened, right? So we need to have the ability as a nation to engage in this kind of a conversation that I think would be healthy and cathartic, right? In South Africa, they had that. And it's, you know, it's a society that's still mm-hmm. moving back and forth. And we all are. We're growing, right? We're young in trying to figure this out. But I think the concept of courage is a key wisdom thing, which means, okay, I have strength. I have strength to look at my history, to look at my current state, and I have belief in myself to look at my state going forward that I'm going to be okay. And I'm going to make sure that you are okay too, right? I have enough strength for me to be okay and for you to be okay. Yeah. We do this with our kids, right? We do this with our kids.
Absolutely.
Our closest ones. If we can just be courageous enough to extend this to people around us, and then with even more courage to extend this to nature around us, right? To the natural environment. And say, you know what? We're smart enough. We can figure this out without having to destroy nature. We can figure this out because, A, it's good for me and it's good for my, it's good for, you know. Wow.
That's fascinating. Well, listen, I know we're getting a little short on time here, but so I definitely want to ask you, first of all, about Upend. You know, tell me about, you know, tell the audience about Upend. What is that? Upend.com, to be more specific.
Sure. So Upend.com is an organization that I founded and put together, and I brought together kind of my life dream, right? I wanted to put together all of my teachers. I couldn't get all of them, but I got a good number of them, various people that I've worked with, some for 30 years, that have been my mentors, my guides, my teachers, people who are deeply steeped in these wisdoms that I'm talking about. And they literally come from all walks of life, right? They're indigenous people, they're, you know, people of color, there's just various different traditions, religions. You know, it's not a full set, right? Everybody and all traditions, but it's diverse enough to where it's very interesting. And there's a common thread. And the common thread is that each of the people that are working with Upend have spent their entire lives really working for others, right? Developing others, coaching others, training others, teaching others, without really so much looking at themselves and, you know, trying to get rich quick, right? But really think about, what does it take to have the world be a place that I want to live in, that I want my children to live in? So what we've pulled together this group of, you know, plus minus a dozen different people, kind of eight in the core group of teachers, and we're putting together classes. So we're experimenting with various modalities, right? Short classes and long classes and online and in person. But Upend right now is a modern school of wisdoms. And the focus is on wisdom skills, right? On practical skills. It's not a philosophical environment. It's like, how do I deal with the fact that my husband does X, my wife does X, my kids do X, my boss does X, my employees do X. Now, how do I grow my business? How do I have less stress in my life? Very, very practical, very basic. But how do I use these tools of ancient wisdoms, of tens of thousands of years of human wisdom, of earth wisdom, of indigenous people's wisdom, of modern academic wisdom, and how do we translate that so that we're not asking people to read 10,000 books and spend 30 years,
right?
But how do we get it in small chunks in classes so they're very practical? So that's it. Upend.com. This is the grand vision. As any, you know, organization, we're stumbling and we're finding our way, and you know, we've run classes, you know, in larger groups, and it's working well, and we're looking for feedback and advice and ideas as we build this going forward.
So the average person who's listening can just go there and gain some wisdom, some skills to learn for themselves and to pass on, obviously, to their whether it be their offspring or to people around them, to their students, whomever they might be. May I just ask, Elver, before we close here, and this is going to kind of put you on the spot, but, you know, is there one bit of wisdom or tradition or something like this that you learned from your studies and going around the world that you can pass on to my listeners that would benefit them? Is there something that stands out to you?
What stands out to me the most is this concept of reciprocity and that it's not a one-on-one. It's this trust. It takes a little time to get to trust it, but the feedback loop is, if I do good things in life, good things come to me. And I don't have to keep track of accounting. I don't have to account for it. I just do what I do best. I'm an empathic friend. I support somebody. I help with project management. I help organize a school fundraiser. I do what I do well, and then the world, the universe gives it right back to me. God, universe, the world, yeah. statistics, whatever it is, comes right back. And if you can get that and feel it in your heart of hearts, and trust it, right? Trust it. This is where religions can be important, but just having that trust.
Yes.
If you produce good things and put good things out there, and you'll know what's good, right? There's no doubt. We all know what's
correct.
Good.
Yes.
It comes back. And it comes back in this lifetime. I'm not talking about karma. It comes back very, very quickly, right? And living in that and figuring this out, dancing with life in this way is extremely powerful. So I invite your listeners to try. Just produce good things and then watch what comes. And
that is so fascinating, because you put that in simple terms. And I hear people all the time say, yeah, I put it out to the universe and all those sorts of things. I mean, you're using a little bit more interesting language, but you're saying go do good and let it go. And it just, it comes back to you. It just, that's it.
There's the
practice. And you have, and as you said, you have to learn to trust it and understand that this is indeed a universal principle from wherever it comes. Again, I'm just of the type that believes it come, all things come from God. But whatever you believe, it's a universal principle that was created, and it happens. It works. And we know this. Well, listen, Elver Kosovic, you know, wow. What a pleasure and honor it is to have you here. And I know it's late, or at least getting later over there in Austria, and to just spend the time to share what I like to say, you spent a lot of time and effort and work and energy into learning these things, and you are passing them on to us who get to just listen to you. Please, everybody, visit upend.com and learn more. Thank you, sir, for spending the time on Grow Yourself.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's so nice to meet you, and I'm looking forward to talking again soon.
Likewise, we have to do this again. So thank you very much. Well, thank you so much, Elver. Wow. I mean, there are so many different directions to go with this conversation, but I know you got to go. I'm gonna let you off the hook here, but let's be in touch.
Please, let's do.
You know,
thank you very much for your time. Thanks for the opportunity. I've read about the kind of work that you do. We're connected in a good way.
I think so.
Let's most definitely stay in touch. I really appreciate it.
Can count on it. Okay. So listen, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.